Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we had quite a week this week. No one would believe what actually happened. You would have to be in the city of Benton Harbor, Michigan, to understand exactly what is going on. Nobody in their right mind would believe the thing that occurred. Monday and Tuesday, a group came in from Detroit and Lansing, Michigan, to film a documentary of the life and style of the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I worked in real good. We went around to different locations. We went down to City Hall. And when we was down at City Hall, we explained to them exactly what was going on and how the city got into this position that they're in today. It started long before the Yarboroughs and the Crenshaws and the Marshalls and the Ricky Hills and Hampton. It started long before then. These people came from all over, and to help destroy, to help put Benton Harbor in a compromising position. I tell you, we have been fighting this fight for 25 years, and it's the same result because the people that we place in power have no idea of the power that they have. Right now, they are working hard to close Benton Harbor High School, the only high school in Michigan, in Benton Harbor, Michigan. It's the only high school that we have, but unfortunately, they want to close it down. They want to shut it down. They want to do what they want to do in order to make sure that Benton Harbor collapsed. Before, what they used to use, their money, their buying power, where they could go out and buy a couple of elected officials. At one time, they had bought 8 elected officials. They didn't need all 8, but they wanted to make sure that they had enough power to do whatever they wanted. I don't know what kind of cash that was laid out underneath the table or placed in an envelope. I have no idea. But we know it was done. That's how Harbor Shores was born. I remember the story when Jack Nicklaus came to the city of Benton Harbor. And early that morning, Whirlpool Corporation, Harbor Shores, and the mayor at that time was Mickey Yarborough. And they all decided they was going to dump garbage on the golf course, which Jack Nicklaus knew all about. He came, and the first words came out of his mouth was, "I can do nothing here in the city of Benton Harbor. There's nothing I can do in the city of Benton Harbor, Michigan." And I said to myself, amazing. I said, he will come around. It's all for the newspapers, him talking about what he can't do in the city of Benton Harbor, Michigan. What made it so important was that when Jack came, he came here with one intention and one intention only. That's to build his Jack Nicklaus signature golf course. There was no ifs, ands, and buts about it. He came here for that purpose and also to deceive the people, because people in Benton Harbor are very easy to deceive. You can buy them and you can sell them. That you can do. But anyhow, here's what's important. He came here on that particular day and they went straight to the beach. He saw the garbage that Whirlpool, Harbor Shores, and I'm thinking the city mayor at that time, Mickey Yarborough, had piled up a lot of garbage on the beach so he could make a spectacle out of this thing. He made the announcement that he could not do anything with this there's no way possible that I'm going to build my Jack Nicklaus signature golf course on a beach with so much garbage. He knew all along that the garbage was placed there by Harbor Shores Whirlpool and the mayor, Mickey Yarborough. He knew that. He knew that. He knew all about it. He knew that this was going to happen. So he played it to the team. He wanted people to beg him to build the Jack Nicklaus signature golf course. That's what he wanted. He wanted people to stop whatever they was doing and say, oh, Jack, build the golf course. Build the golf course. Build the 6th, 7th, and 8th hole on Gene Clark Beach. That's what he wanted people to say, you know, and nobody said other than Harbor Shores or Whirlpool, maybe Mickey Yarborough. I don't remember hearing him say anything, but I know he was part of it, you see. And eventually he came around, which I already knew he would. He would come around and want to build, because it's on stolen land. See, they stole that land. And when they stole that land, you know what was coming next. So we was prepared for him. And that's when we were strong. You know, we were 500-600 strong at that time. So, you know, we really had the first say and the last say, you know, because I know that we was right on top of it, you see. But anyway, the city council voted to allow Jack Nicklaus to build his golf course on Gene Clark Beach, which was given to the residents of Benton Harbor. That, you know, that includes the mayor, but he did not have a say over it. So they took that land. Now, here's where I'm grabbing at. Now they're going after the high school. You see, they're going after the high school. And now what they want to do, they want to build a gated community on school property land from Main Street to Empire to Colfax. All that will be converted into a gated community. You see, this mayor, Marcus Muhammad, made the announcement that they was going to provide 1,000 jobs. That's right, 1,000 jobs. And he thought that the community would be going nuts over that. He thought that he had them just where he wanted it. He thought he had everybody, you see. But what he did announce was they were going to gentrify from Main Street all the way to Empire, over to Colfax. So that's where the school property line is. So what he was telling you and I, that he was going to tear down the high school, put a shopping mall and a gated community right where the high school is. It is all going to be part of the Harvest Shores project, which is connected to the master plan. Amazing what money can do. Our children's education means nothing right now. Our children's education means exactly nothing at this time. Anytime that you have a mayor who willing to sell his soul to the devil for a few dollars and destroy the future of all our children, including his children. His children is not exempt from this. He was willing to sell his soul to Whirlpool Corporation, Harbor Shores, for a few dollars. He wanted to be like the former mayor, James Hightower, who was a straight-up sellout. He was a sellout, but he was making money. He made $150,000 for nothing and got stock from Whirlpool Corporation. This guy went out on the limb to destroy the city of Benton Harbor, and none of the people said a mumbling word. His friends, his church members, they didn't say a word about this guy, you see. And this is one thing we as black people do. We do not stand up and fight back. We're dealing with a monster. We're dealing with people who will do anything to destroy us. You know, they don't love us. They never did love us. Why all of a sudden would they start loving you? Do it make sense to you? Why would you want to sell your family out? Because when you sell my family out, you're selling yours out too. You may not see it today, but tomorrow is coming if you live to see it. So we are fighting a real battle here. And I want people to know I got a very, very important guest coming up. Bring him on right now. I'm expecting another important guest to call. But this guy right here, we got to put our arms around him and support him. Those of you who are out there who love me, who like me, who don't like me, please listen to what this young man has to say. And I'm going to bring him in because we don't know when. What's going to happen next. And I want to bring in Lee. And Lee is very important. I want people to make sure that y'all hear what we're saying and hear exactly what's going on here, because we're going to put our arms around him and we're going to give him all the support he needs. Also, I want him to write an article, and I'm going to put it in the People Tribune out of Chicago to get some additional help for him. Lee, are you there? Talk to me, Lee.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How you feeling, man? You're sounding really up spirit. I like this.
I have to. I got the Father with me, you know. They're trying to destroy me every angle that they're trying to, but I'm not giving up. I'm not going to give up. I can't do that. I don't know how to do that.
And you know what? And that's what I want to see. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to rally my friends from Detroit, Flint, Saginaw, Kalamazoo, Battle Creek, Ann Arbor. I'm going to rally my friends around you and see what kind of help that we can bring to you, because you're going to need all the help you can get, my brother. And I know that this is a story that needs to be told. I want you to start where you want to start telling this story, because I'm going to give you as much time as I can. Like I said, I am expecting a God call from Mr. Victor, but even I'll give him a few minutes, but then I'll bring you back as necessary, because you are too important at this time for your story not to be heard, because you're going to trial pretty soon. So I want you to take your time and tell us what you need to know. And then at the end, I want you to tell us how we can help you. That's the key word at the end, but I want you to take your time so people can get a good thought about you. Talk to me right now.
Okay. Now, I've received, after I went to my arraignment under the at the federal court. I went to the arraignment because it was a whole setup where they said someone purchased crack from me. Mm-hmm. This story was a complete false. When they came to the house, their original intentions was to kill me. I'm just going to be honest. They came with reports saying that I was going to shoot it out with them and all of that. When in reality, I'm like, why do you guys got tanks and bulletproof and all of this in an ambulance? They say, well, we was expecting a shootout with you. I said, a shootout? I'm like, dude, whoever told y'all that is lying. So when they arrested me, they took me to the Inkster jail. They put me in the basement of the Inkster jail. I wasn't allowed to use the phones or anything because they didn't want me to communicate with nobody and tell anybody where I was at. So I'm like, this is not making any sense here. This is something that's fishy about this whole situation, because you arrested me in Detroit. My house is in Detroit. When you came to arrest me, so I'm like, is there any type of way that I can call my family? They was like, no, you can't use the phone until after you talk to us. So I'm like, this ain't making no sense to me. So the guys, they was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest. I tried to even go to the hospital. You know, they made sure they came there with me and everything and watched my every move to see who I was communicating with. Well, the only way for me to get out, it was like, well, you're going to have to cooperate with us. I say, okay, what do you guys need me to do? They said, well, we need 2 kilos of cocaine. First of all, where the hell am I going to get 2 kilos of cocaine? Excuse my language. Mm-hmm. But where am I going to get this from? So I said, okay, I tell y'all what. I'm going to work with y'all, but y'all need to put me back on the street. So once they put me back on the street, I ran and hired an attorney, explained to them everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're upset. Because I'm like, no, you guys violated my rights all the way around. You guys sitting here trying to tell me, they like, yeah, your brother did this to you. Your brother did this to me. My brother didn't have nothing to do with this. Y'all wanted me to try to do something to my brother. This is what the state police was trying to promote to me. Well, once I get to the arraignment and I get a hold of the discovery, I realize, oh, wow, this was a complete setup. Now, they say, well, we got on him because after we obtained a warrant around May 15th and we placed a tracker on his vehicle, I said it. Well, why is both warrants in my discovery signed June 6, 2018 by Judge Alexis Croc out of Hamtramck? Then they said around May 18th, I went to my brother's house and I did what they called a short stay. And at that conclusion, it is likely I'm supplying my brother with crack cocaine. I said, my brother was court ordered not to be at his house. His wife is willing to testify that I was not at their house. And on top of that, he has a federal GPS tether on his leg. So if I was at, he got arrested in March. So if I was at his house in May, that would have, the federal government would have revoked his bond because he was somewhere that he was court ordered not to be. Of course, his bond was never revoked, which means he was never there. I know he wasn't there. His wife knows. His wife is even willing to come to court and testify on my behalf. I say, so how was I made this, I was there and I'm supplying my brother if he was living with my sister at the time. And to be exact, he was at work at the time that y'all said that I was supposed to be there supplying him with drugs. He has a federal GPS tether on his leg. So the government knows everywhere he was at every single time. Another thing, they said a person made a controlled buy. I said, well, who is this person that supposedly made a controlled buy? Because if they made a controlled buy, why am I not being charged with this drugs that supposedly had came up in this controlled buy? So if I'm not being charged with it, why is that? Because there was never a controlled buy. It was all made up. It was fraudulent. So now the next question is, since y'all put in there that you have obtained some crack, who did you obtain it from? Who is this person? So clearly this person had to admit within the lie that you have obtained some crack from somehow. Well, of course it wasn't me.
Yeah.
Because I don't sell crack. So where did you get this crack from? Now, all of this is going on. They took it to the federal government. They tried to put a bunch of charges on me. They even had people riding by my job after I got released by the government, to the point I had to start taking Lasher up into Southfield and take 9 Mile all the way down to Mound just to get to my job to stay out of the reach of the Detroit City Police and the Wayne County Sheriff's. So I'm like, okay, district.
So you had to go through 2 other counties to avoid them.
Just
so
to get to work every morning.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Just to get to work because they was constantly on me. My attorney, Sorrell Hall, every single time I made him aware, he say, man, this is something deeper going on. Because when the feds got you, they don't continue to follow you around. I say, it's not the feds. It's the Wayne County Sheriff's and the Detroit City Police. My sister, everybody on the neighborhood, they was like, why is all of these sheriffs sitting on the block and watching? They're parking down the street at like 2-3 in the morning, waiting for me to go to work. They're parking their vehicles down there and getting out, walking up and down the block. I'm like, so now they know where I'm working, what's my schedule. What it is, they're trying to silence me because they know that all of them went before this federal grand jury and they committed perjury. Because you guys, everybody had committed perjury.
Uh-huh.
They said, you know, it's like, how can you sit there and say you obtained a warrant when I have a copy of the warrant in my discovery that's signed 6/6/18/3:35 p.m. by Judge Alexis Krupp? There is no warrant in the discovery signed around May 15th.
Uh-huh.
So not only
is that the day they arrested you? What day they arrested you?
They arrested me June 8th, 2018.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right, go ahead. I just want to make sure I'm clear. Go ahead.
So when I'm looking, I'm like, I explained it to my lawyer. I'm like, did you see this? He's like, they saying you made a control buy. I said, the control buy is non-existent. I said, that's a complete lie. I say, if you look up Jones versus U.S., this is a federal case law, which as well as Carpenter versus U.S., you need a warrant to place a tracking device on a vehicle. That's one. Two, you couldn't have had a tracking device on my vehicle, because if you did, you would have realized that I was not even at my brother's house, which means that you just told a blank lie in front of the federal grand jury. Because he was court ordered not to be there, and he's got a federal GPS tether. So that means you guys just told a flat out lie, and this was the Michigan State Police who done this. So now I'm trying to avoid, just to even get to work, I got to avoid the Michigan State Police, the Wayne County Sheriff's, as well as the Detroit City Police. All of them has been trying to, they've been questioning people, trying to tell them, hey, we want you to go to one girl I talked to. She was like, man, they was asking me about a guy in Southwest, but I really can't talk about it right now. But they trying to say something about him shooting somebody. I'm like, what? So I'm like, so that's why all these people is riding by my job, trying to get an identifier, because they're trying to figure out how can we build a stronger case against him, because we know that we messed up. Every single time I'm making my attorney aware of it, he's like, man, you sure you're not just paranoid? I say, I know you think I am, but at the end of this case, you're going to find out the truth on everything. That's why I do not want to take a deal. I can't take it. I said, if I was guilty, I'll take a deal. They're even telling people in the streets, oh, you know, he told on you, or we're going to bust you, and this guy Lee told on you, and y'all need to do something to him. So now I got people that's trying to follow me around, figuring, oh, this guy Lee told on me. I say, first of all, if a guy's telling, he's not going to go to trial. You know, so how am I telling if I'm taking it all the way to trial? I'm only want to take it to trial because I know it's all fraudulent and it's a bunch of corruption.
Wow.
Now you have people who are friends with the police. I even have recorded conversations. And as soon as I get out, the first thing a guy comes to me and say is, hey, man, I don't know how your money's land, but, you know, let's go in on a kilo of heroin and we can hide it in a safe deposit box in the bank and we won't let nobody know. I say, dude, everything you freaking saying to me sounds federal. What are you trying to do right now? He was like, no, I'm not saying nothing like that. I'm like, no, it's like you're setting me up, man. You don't think that I can see that? Why would you, anybody goes to any guy who just got busted and asked him, hey, let's go buy some drugs? It doesn't make sense.
And then he said, put it in a safe deposit box. That
put it in a
federal
safe deposit box in a bank.
If you put it
everything
in a bank,
you're,
you, that
yes.
becomes, that's a
I looked at him like, are you serious? Did you really just come to me with that?
Wow.
I'm like, they're briefing you wrong if this is your angle. They're telling you some BS to come say to me and thinking that I'm just going to be a bird brain or something and just fall for this banana in the tailpipe.
Wow.
Now I'm getting people riding by. They call themselves identifying me. They're riding by my son's mother's house. I mean, it's like right now I'm literally trying my best to avoid all these officers before trial. Because they know the truth is going to come out. Their intentions was to kill me in the raid. if half of these officers was on that was on this raid team, if they if you did a Freedom of Information Act on my case, you will realize the reports they had. They had my case sealed for a long time,
mm-hmm.
saying like, "Oh, he's a threat. He's gonna start killing witnesses and this and that." I explained to the lady at pretrial services. I say, "Miss McComley, it ain't about me killing witnesses. That's a total lie. What it is, mm-hmm. they know what I know about them and how crooked the police is working with these drug dealers out here and suppressing evidence on murder. You have the chief of police, House, who was shot up, and these people are dealing with this guy. And if the chief of police for River Ridge ain't even safe, what makes you think any regular citizen out here is safe?"
Wow. Wow. Wow.
See, this is what's going on. Deborah Hayes Price, who was the former chief of police for River Ridge, Michigan. If they can suppress evidence when her house is shut up, I ain't got a chance in heck. I don't have a chance no way, no how. If she ain't got a chance, and she's the top law enforcement for the city of River Ridge.
Wow. Well, let me ask you a question. What would be the makeup of the jury? How many blacks do you think you might be able to get on that jury?
Truthfully, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't even know at the moment because they're going to pick anybody from the Eastern District of Michigan.
Uh-huh.
So there's no telling.
Yeah.
You know, I might end up with some of the juries of some of these people, family members.
Right. What I'm thinking is, you know, because most of the juries, like I know here in Barron County in Kalamazoo, where the federal is, 90%, 99% of the people that are selected are white. My wife had the opportunity to be on the jury, and when the judge looked up and saw her, he almost had a heart attack, thinking that this is about to be happening. Because they don't really want black people on the jury, especially when it comes to black people. And black people try so hard to get not to be on the jury, which really, really ticks me off because you, whatever you are, you know, you want to leave, even if they find you guilty, you still want to have a black face on that jury, somebody who looks familiar to you. Every trial that I have ever had, except for one, which ended in a hung jury, it was all white. All white jurors. That's what I have always had was all white juries. And fortunate for me that, you know, I had lawyers, and they're from Detroit, and they came and fought, and we always got it overturned, like in the Court of Appeals or the Supreme. The last one, I had to take it all the way to the Supreme Court to have it overturned. And they decided that it was absolutely no such crime as forgery on a recall petition. So that was amazing. They gave me 30 months to 10 years in prison. And I did 30 months. You know, I did the whole 30 months. And I was about to complete my parole. And the Supreme Court ruled and threw everything out, said it was no such charge. Well, I knew it was no such charge. See, that's the difference. I knew there was no such charge as forgery on a recall petition. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've been going over it. I've been court watching since, I don't know, since 1998, you know. And I know pretty much a lot about the law. And I always surround myself with attorneys that know what's going on. And to me, that's important. But one thing I know about, matter of fact, I even challenge the jury system. Because reason unknown, I don't know why my black brothers and sisters do not want to be on the jury. You know, if I'm guilty, find me guilty. I don't have a problem with that. But what I do have a problem with, you lying, talking about you can't be on because your leg hurt. I got a headache. I get headache when I sit too long. I've been knowing him for years and don't know him, you know. And don't know me. One guy told black guy said he spoke to me 25 years ago. 25? Can you believe this? 25 years ago, I spoke to him in church, and that's how I know him. 25 years. And I said,
May I say one more thing, too?
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, one of the other charges on me, they're charging with my son's mother's gun, which has never been fired off, right?
Right.
Now, she admitted that this gun is hers. She's a CPL holder. They said, because we ran in her house, and when I was there just to pick my kids up to take them to school, I figure, okay, me and you ain't together, but I'm gonna do you a favor today. I'm gonna grab the kids. I'll take them to school. You stay in the bed. So this is the house they arrested me at. They're charging me with her gun. She said, how is you charging him with my gun when I have a receipt? I even have pictures of her posing with this gun. You know, I mean, they told the jury.
Y'all don't live together either, do y'all? You don't live with her, do you?
No, my ID, my vehicles, nothing is registered to her house. Nothing.
Oh, that's not going to fly. Even I don't care if it's all white jury. That is not going to fly. Because you have to have...
All my vehicles, I still have copies of all my registrations to all my vehicles that they say they place trackers on. I have my state driver's license and everything. And my ID and everything is in Southwest Detroit. Where you guys arrested me at, which was my son's mother's house, which is not my house. And she was like, okay, well, why has he been charged with this? So then they say, so how long you and Lee been together? She said, well, we've been together off and on for 8 years. They switch her words up, tell the federal grand jury, and put it in my discovery. Well, she said they've been living together off and on for 8 years. Well, that's impossible because for 3 years, she was living in Las Vegas, in North Las Vegas, Nevada. They can prove that through the Secretary of State because she just came back to the state of Michigan. Then, before that time, she was down there for a year. My son's school records can show that. Her identification can show that. You can pull her name up on Google, and her Las Vegas address is still going to show up. How was we living together off and on for 8 years? If she's for them years, she wasn't even in the state of Michigan.
Wow. And
that can be proven.
Absolutely. That's not going to fly. I'm going to tell you just like it is. It's not going to fly. But listen, you got 3 minutes to tell us what you want everybody to do and how we can help you. To me, that's the most important thing.
I need as much attention on this case because it's a complete case of corruption. And as long as it stays quiet, they're going to be able to do whatever they want to do to me.
Absolutely. You 100%.
They've been trying to
correct.
Get me in the county jail. That way they can do whatever and keep me quiet.
Right. So what you want some people to drive to put this out there so they'll know exactly what's going on. Lee, I tell you, we're going to do everything within our power to help you. And make me that. I want you to write me an article in reference to this and email it to me as soon as possible so we can get it in the newspaper before you go to trial. And
I will, because I go at August 6th.
Right. And I will also spread it around my email list and see can we get folks to really come out. I got a lot of friends in Detroit, which you're going to be, your trial is going to take place in Detroit, right? Is I'm correct?
Yes, it's at the Eastern District Federal Courthouse.
Right, in Detroit, I know that much. And I'll see, can I get some people down there to support you, and then we can take it from there. But here's what I want to do. I want to make sure people understand exactly who you are so they'll know that, you know, that this system definitely don't work. It doesn't work for us, and we need to get our heads together and get out here and start fighting back. And I want to tell you, Lee, I'm really proud of you. I know you had called me about, I don't know, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and you trying to tell me your case, and My thing was, wait a minute, Lee, wait a minute. Call me in the morning. Don't call me right now. I know you want me to sit here and listen to you, and you was on a roll, too. Well, I couldn't even get a word in. You lucky I didn't doze off and fall asleep, but I'm so happy that you called. But I'm going to give you a call back today or tomorrow and strategize a little bit with you. And see what level that we need to fight this thing on, because I think that, you know, we're in a position today where you and I can do some incredible work. And I tell you, if we don't get on it, you know, by the time you get to court, they're going to have a whole different story. Because one of the things that they told me when I was on trial, and they told the jury, you don't need evidence to convict Reverend Edward Pinckney. You do not need evidence. You could send him to prison. And the judge echoed this. This is what the judge said. Whatever decision you make, talking to the jury now, it will be final. And you know what? They was almost correct, because the Court of Appeals said, we don't want to hear nothing about there was not enough evidence. We already know that there was not enough evidence to convict him. But a jury convicted him, so that's going to stand. I never heard that before. I always thought that if we could prove there was insufficiency of evidence, that it could be overturned. But they said
that. That is true.
And I called them the three blind mice, the Court of Appeal, because I had to give them a title, even though it hurt it, but you have to keep moving. Because this is how the system is built. It's built to destroy us. And then we allow it to destroy us. So that makes us really no better than them, you know. And I believe that, Lee, I wish we had talked earlier. I know you got your lawyer. We need to make sure that we talk to your lawyer, make sure he don't take a dive. Because it's crucial with the information you have given me. I believe that we can find you not guilty. I believe that jury can find you not guilty. And I believe that if we have our act together, it will. But anyway, what I'm going to do, I'm going to, you know, every week, every Sunday, you got yourself 10 minutes to come on the show and talk about whatever you want. 10 minutes. I got you. I'm going to pencil you in on my schedule so people can know exactly who you are. Because people need to know.
I appreciate it.
Most people don't believe it. You know, I got another young lady, Belinda Brown from Louisiana. She's next up on the list, and we got the case with Mr. Victor, him and his wife. I think I told you a little bit about it, how they accused him of murdering his son, and him and his wife, and he's serving life without the possibility of parole, but he got a way out. But none of these attorneys want to help him get out. So what I want to do also with him, it's amazing. You know, we're living in tough times, you know, but that's some of that is us, Lee. Look, I got to bring in this young lady. I got to let you go. Don't hang up.
This,
and we will talk soon, and anytime you feel like talking, don't hesitate to call me. All right, except in the morning. Don't call me 2-3 times in the morning. yeah, you good. Look, you good to go, you know, but 2-3 o'clock is not going to work. All right, my brother, love you. And listen, we gonna make this thing happen. That's my good guy, Lee. He deserves better, but I got to bring in my good friend from Slidell, Louisiana. The water has rescinded there, but we got something very, very important that we need to talk about. My good friend, Belinda Parker Brown from Slidell, Louisiana. And if you ask me again, I knock you down. Are you there, Belinda Parker Brown? Talk to me.
Hey, Pastor Pinckney!
It's going down. It's going down.
Pastor Pinckney.
Down.
Wow, you're right. It's going down. You know, I was desperate to get on this call with you today. We're in the middle of a meeting.
But
I did get a chance to listen to, was it Mr. Lee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear him from the beginning, Pastor Pinckney, but it sounds like he got something very interesting going on in his case that, you know, that we've been dealing with here in Louisiana for quite some time to expose the injustice in our criminal justice system. And that's the reason why that we're rallying and mobilizing and organizing the people to come together to have a comprehensive investigation on our criminal justice system here in the state of Louisiana.
Absolutely.
So, I'm really excited about that. But you tell me, I know, Pastor Pinckney, I just want to say to you how much I enjoyed you for that short moment that I was there in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and looking at all the exciting things that you've got going on there, and the building and everything. I done shared it with a couple of my friends. I don't know if you remember Dr. James Tucker. I just got off the phone and sent him some pictures of the building. And, you know, looking forward to meeting up with him in St. Louis sometime in September. I'm hoping that you'll be able to make that trip
August,
too as well.
That's August. August the 9th and 10th. I'll be there.
Oh, okay. August the 9th and 10th?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll get there that Friday, the 9th, and then the 10th, and we'll be there. Then I'm heading home. That's how it's going to be.
Okay, well, I better go back and make sure I check my itinerary for that, agenda for that, too, as well, because I know Betty had called me a few days ago, and I'm looking forward to it because I think that some things is going to jump off there that's literally something that we've been, you know, hoping that would happen with bringing people together from all over to do something big, Pastor Pinckney. And I know that you're doing some great things there in Benton Harbor. And we, you know, just listening to what Lee is saying with his case and situation, how, you know, our government is operating. You know, we're at a time now where we got to hold these people accountable. We got to have, you know, people organized and mobilized and ready to come in and support, you know, situations like his, and, you know, and especially, I mean, don't nobody know how to do that better than you, because that's what we had to do in getting you free from these trumped up charges when they put you in prison for absolutely nothing, okay, that I'm still not happy about. And I know for a fact that, you know, you had to beat them, Pastor Pinckney. You just didn't beat them for yourself. You beat them for everybody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you said the magic words, you know, that this fight is, to me, is so, so important that, and let me say this. We got to sit down and figure out how we going to get these attorneys to actually listen to Mr. Victor. Because to me, it's his life. You see, if I'm an attorney, even though you hired me, my job is to listen to you. My job is to listen to what you need to say. That's one of the things that I made perfectly clear with Buck, Elliot, Tim, all my lawyers. I made sure that they understood that, you know, regardless how you feel legally about stuff, this is the way I want it to be handled. Because the issue, here's something happening with me. They had this, when we got ready to file the appeal to the Court of Appeal, they did not want to include the issue that there was no such charge as forgery on. They figured they'll win because there was no evidence. And when they made the statement at the Court of Appeals, that they don't care about there was no evidence. These are their words. Tim could not even argue that there was no evidence. They didn't want to hear that. They said, we don't care about that. A jury found him guilty, and that's the point of saying, because the judge said, regardless, whatever decision you make is going to be final. He was wrong on that part, but he was right to say, just because there's no evidence that this thing going to be reversed, that wasn't going to happen. That wasn't going to happen with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court wasn't going to rule just because there was absolutely no evidence that Pinckney was going to be released. It wasn't going to happen. And I knew it. You know, just by being in prison, I listened and watched everybody else. Everybody was hollering. There was they didn't have no evidence. They didn't have no evidence, you know. And I said to myself, we're going to have a problem. I said that. I said, we're going to have a problem. You know, once you, as a black person, once you get convicted, you see, with no evidence, that don't mean a thing.
Right.
They don't care nothing about no evidence. I was shocked when I heard that.
And Pastor Pinckney, you're absolutely right. But when you say that we got to get these defense attorneys, okay, to understand that they cannot be afraid of the judges to present their case, you know, in defense of their client.
Right. And
you know, this is the problem that we're having, is that we don't have strong defense attorneys that want to go in and prosecute these crimes that, you know, that the courts are committing. You know, for them to charge you, you know, with a trumped up, you know, like you said, there was no such charge.
Mm-hmm. And they knew that.
You know.
They knew that.
That's a crime.
Right.
That is a crime for them to fabricate something, you know, that does not even exist.
Absolutely.
And then prosecute you for something that they know don't exist.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is what I want to say about Mr. Victor. For this guy, these attorneys, they can't be afraid because, you know, you're dealing with on a different level. You're not dealing on a local level. You're dealing, like, if you're going to the Supreme Court, that's a whole different level. See, you don't have to worry about them getting angry at you and mad at you about that, because that's a whole different ball game. If it's on the local level, they don't want to overturn it very few courts going to overturn a case on the local level. Okay, the Court of Appeals. That's the medium. That's in between there. Very few cases are overturned. I had a couple of cases overturned at the Court of Appeals, but that's because we had what we needed. You know, we did. We got them by law. Now the Supreme Court, which Mr. Victor is going to, these attorneys, they can make history. They can become millionaires just by going in there and winning the case. It doesn't make any sense to me. There's no logic to this. Why would a person be afraid to, if Mr. Brown, that's his new attorney name, right? Is that Mr. Brown?
Attorney Brown.
He should.
Correct. Attorney Brown.
Right. Whatever.
No relations.
I believe I understand. I know that part. But Belinda Brown, I'm Belinda Parker Brown. I know that much. But look, he should want to go in there and win the case. I can't see a person saying I'm afraid. Whatever Mr. Victor wants in that brief and money being paid to him, he have an obligation to go in there and holler and scream for Mr. Victor. If Mr. Victor said put a brown shoe in there, his job is to put a brown shoe in there, long as he has law to back it up. And Mr. Victor has law to back it up. This is something, Mr. Brown, even if he's a new attorney, he need to understand that. There's nothing more important than doing what your attorney, what your client wants you to do. I hate when I hear these guys tell me, I'm using my legal mind. No. You're gonna use my mind to make sure you're doing what I need to do in order. And I'm the one got to do the task. Like I told Kat. Kat told me one time. He said, "I said I want you to bring the investigator, the forensic guy back. I want you to bring him back." He said, "Oh no, we can't." I said, "Oh yes, you can." I told him, "I said yes, you can bring him back.
Uh-huh.
Don't tell me you can't bring him back. I said, you can bring him back. Did he die? I said, what did he do? He died last night? Or what? You know, he said, no, I said, well, you can bring him back then. I know you can't bring him back from the dead, but you can bring him back. You know, and we brought him back.
Right, to testify in this trial, you can bring him back. Right, absolutely, Pastor Pickens.
So we brought, but we didn't need him to come back because they knew that what we was trying to do, so they stipulated to it. You see, so cause we knew that this guy was lying. We know that he when people be paid, you know, they work for the state, they will lie, and it's okay, but because they get away with it, don't make it all right. You see, look, just because they say it, don't make it true. And that's what we got to get through. But I tell you one thing, though, Belinda and Coach, I think is very, very important. We are going to have to find a way to get Mr. Victor to be able to file that he needs to sit down with Mr. Victor all day and have Mr. Victor to write the brief and go over the brief, and he legalize it with his attorney skills to fit into what we want. It's not going to be a long brief. It's going to be short. I would bet it don't even be 15 pages. And I think that this Mr. Brown, I think that he should always, before he do anything, contact this man. Because this man's serving life in prison without the possibility of parole. Oh, man.
Right. For a crime that he did not commit, that we know for a fact that he did not commit the crime. The only reason why Mr. Victor is in prison is because he was a black man that was in business on his way to becoming a billionaire. He was already a multimillionaire, okay? That's the only reason why Mr. Victor is in prison today, Miss Pastor Pickney. And, you know, I like to say Reverend Victor or Pastor Victor because, you know, this man was an ordained minister, him and his wife both, you know, and he was also, a prominent developer, you know, in that area that was getting ready to build what we would call it is like a script mall. It's like a script mall, but it was going to be able to open up businesses and restaurants and hotels and give black people the opportunity to start their own businesses and stuff that, you know, that sits right outside of New Orleans. It was a corridor that's right outside the city of New Orleans, which would be a fantastic place for people to, get away from the hustle and bustle of the city. So they knew this was coming. And the judge that convicted him is what really, that was just horrific. This was the most misgrave of justice that you can even ever imagine, that the judge that convicted Mr. Victor to life in prison was the wife of Mr. Victor's competitor, that Mr. Victor competed with in development, all right? She was the wife.
Amazing.
You know, and when Mr. Victor, recuse her, and recuse that whole parish, okay, that was all in cahoots with each other, they refused. He never got an answer from the First Circuit Court to recuse these people, to change his trial to another venue.
Wow.
You know, this Pastor Pickney, I'm telling you, Louisiana, and I want your listeners to know that we're getting ready to organize and mobilize people. We're asking people to come from all over in October, and I have not set the date, and please forgive me, but we think we're looking at the first week of October, between the 1st and the 10th of October, and that is because that October is an election year for governor and a lot of our legislators and elected officials, that that can be re-voted back into office or that can be voted out of office. And the reason why we want to have this mass demonstration on the Capitol of Baton Rouge, okay, on the steps of the Capitol in Baton Rouge, okay, in October, is because we want people to come from all over the world to stand with us to expose the injustice in the criminal justice system here in the state of Louisiana and ask for a comprehensive investigation on all of our courts and prisons and jails, because we know for a fact that Louisiana have taken the lead in this type of corruption, Pastor Pinckney, okay?
Absolutely.
And we're going to stay
Absolutely.
Focused. We're going to stay focused. And that's why we're saying that the unanimous is not enough. And we have to expose this to get the freedom for thousands of people that are being held captive and kidnapped inside of these jails and prisons across the state. And I believe that the fire starts here, that is going to spread and ignite across the entire country to bring notice to this type of injustice. And you know, we know for a fact, Pastor Pinckney, you have already experienced it, what the criminal justice system can do to you. You know, especially when you are organizing and mobilizing people on the crimes, you know, any type of political, you know, we're talking about political imprisonment, okay? They set out to stop you from helping those people there in Benton Harbor, from exposing them and what they were doing, the crimes that they were committing, that our government was committing, you know, all in cahoots with the corporate businesses, Whirlpool and them, okay? They knew that you had the story, you knew their plan, and that you was coming for them to stop them from doing what they had set out to do with a 40-year plan. They knew
Absolutely.
That. And they knew that you had the attention of the people. You know, because I remember the meetings, you know, where we would have standing room only in those meetings.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You said it all.
And we was recalling them left and right. You already know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they had to come up with something. And I'm excited about the documentary that you're doing. And I just know that people are, you know, you're going to get the 100% support with that, Pastor Pinckney, because, you know, people need to know that story. All right.
Absolutely.
They need to know that is, you know, that story is not just happening in Benton Harbor, but wherever they can get away with that kind of stuff, they're going to do it.
And you are.
And it's time out. It's time out for letting us just sit back and be silent. You know, and the people in Benton Harbor, Pastor Pinckney, I'm telling you, it was a terrible sight.
Oh, yeah. It's This, you know, and the people, man, it took this long to get the people to the stage they're at right now. And when I talk about the people here, I tried to maybe convince myself that there is something that could come of these people if we work hard enough to get them, you know. But don't expect nothing from them. See, if you don't expect nothing from these people, then you would never be hurt by these people. See, that's how I look at it. So that's why I do what I do. I use the term stick and move.
Stick and move.
And yes, keep moving.
But I think there's a lot of people there, Pastor Pinckney, they know the truth. They know the truth about you now. At times, you know, I know that it was kind of hard for people to wrap their minds around, you know, what you was trying to get them to see that was coming down the pipeline. You know, long before, you know, a lot of these things actually started transpiring. And I know a lot of the people now, they realize that Benton Harbor would not be in the state and condition that it's in now if they just would have stood with you at the time that when you was trying to, in the beginning, Pastor Pinckney. It's so sad. You know, why do it take people so long to catch on?
Here's one thing, they keep listening to these ministers here. These guys, well, these are not.
Wow.
These preachers.
What you say? Now, that's the truth.
Yeah, they keep listening to these preachers who don't have a best interest. Anytime you listen to a preacher and he wants you to pay your tithe and offering and take 4 or 5 collections up, I got a problem with that. You know, especially it's not giving back to the community. You got to give back to this community, Belinda Brown. Listen, I'm down.
Pastor Pickney, you just hit the nail on the head, and on that note, I think we can end the show.
Amen. That's man. And listen, we will talk soon. And check your calendar when you're gonna get there. And we'll talk very soon. On that note,
all right then. Thank you so much.
Thank Lee for being on the show and everybody, but especially you, Belinda Brown. But we're going to make things happen. Let's do it. Let's see if we save Lee. God bless you. God keep you. We'll talk to you very, very soon. Amen.